the meeting to order at 6:05. So welcome everybody. My name is Claudia Young. I am the staff person for the Revenue Advisory Committee. And we wanted to have an opportunity for our new members to get familiar with the Rent Review Advisory Committee process and to get a little bit of background on the Sunshine Act and also the Brown Act. So I know it's been a little while since we've met because we've had many of our cases resolved, and so we haven't really had a meeting, and many people haven't had an opportunity to actually see how the RAC works. But I wanted to remind everybody that on the internet, on the AlamedaHSG.org website, we actually have all the minutes. I think it would be beneficial to see minutes looking from probably about June on, because I think we haven't really had a meeting since June, only one. But that would give you a better idea of how the meetings are run for the group. So we are fortunate enough to have some of our old RAC members here, and they're going to be able to kind of pass the baton and kind of give you a little bit of orientation to understand, you know, why you're here, what the process is, what types of cases we see, and just to give you an idea about the process. So we have Karen Miller and David Perry. So I'm going to let them get started.
Should we just sit here and do it?
Yeah. So you just got to talk a little bit. Okay.
Okay, so the RAC has been around since 78 when we had a similar situation happen with rents in Alameda. It was decided that that was the best way to handle things. Rather, there was really no dialogue that was going on before that. So originally it consisted of three renters, three landlords, and a neutral homeowner. We never could get that many people on the board for somehow. We never could keep a quorum. So I want to say three or four years ago, we changed it to being what it is now with the 2, 2, and 1.
To be clear on that, it was the city council that changed it.
Well, yeah, but we asked. We basically said we can't keep this up because we couldn't meet without a quorum. We can't meet. It has been a very rewarding process for me. I think it's very. I would always feel like I don't want to come to a meeting. I have other things to do, and you come to a meeting and you mediate things and you feel really good about the fact that you've been able to help somebody. And it is a mediation. You are mediating, you are not advocating. And that's why it works. I think the biggest thing to do as far as the RAC is being a member is to listen. Everybody has their stories on both sides. When you're talking about rental issues, it's very emotional on both sides, both for the landlord and the tenant. Landlords have various reasons. I mean, some people are just businessmen. Other people, this is their sole source of income. So it can be very emotional. And clearly for tenants, it's pretty scary when you might have to leave your home. And the process that when I was the chair, we would always ask the tenant, because they're the ones who brought the case, to speak first. And we're always willing to let the tenant speak pretty much as long as they wanted, unless they got way too far off track, which sometimes that happens. You kind of have to pull them back. But just let them, I mean, their stories are very involved and very emotional, and it's important that they get a chance to speak. Then we have the landlord come up and listen to their story as to why they think that it was justified in raising the rent as much as they did. I always felt a good strategy, for lack of a better word, with the landlord would be to say, what would happen if your rent went up 30%? If your home mortgage went up 30%, could you stay? And it kind of put them in a position where they could understand what was really happening to somebody. A lot of times, the landlord and tenant in this meeting, it's the first time they've ever even met each other. and having a dialogue, just that having them talk for the first time and really understanding where they're coming from, a lot of times we would end up with cases resolved just by them actually being able to speak. Because if they can work it out in front of you, you don't have to make a recommendation. You can just back off and, you know, they can work it out, which happens quite a bit. The other thing that I would do on the tenant side would ask the tenant what they thought would be fair. Because most tenants understand the landlord's costs go up. They just, they want to know why, what's going on. And I would ask a tenant, what do you think would be fair? And they would come up with something that they would a lot of times agree on. So basically, I think that the biggest takeaway for being on the board is to listen and to understand that you're mediating, not advocating. Yes, you may be a tenant, you may be a landlord, you may be a homeowner, but I never took that into account when I was doing it. I wasn't being a landlord on there. I was listening to what was happening, and David's a tenant, and most of the time we agreed on whatever decision, I didn't tell you all of the time, we agreed on whatever decision happened, because we would all talk. This is because of the Sunshine Law and Brown Act. Everything that you're discussed, you'll hear both sides of the story. Then you have, so the tenant speaks first, the landlord speaks, then you ask the tenant if they need to speak some more, and then you can go back and forth. And when they speak, you have questions. Let them speak, and then if you have questions to ask them, clarify what it is that you want to know. I felt very good about doing this, because you really do bring people together, and you can find, there really is a lot of common ground that you can find as long as you make everybody listen to each other, or give them the opportunity to listen to each other.
Before David continues, I didn't realize I didn't give you an opportunity to introduce yourself and to say what position you're sitting in for. So, Christopher, if you can start.
My name is Christopher Griffiths. I'm on the tenant position.
I'm Suzanne Warner, and I'm in a homeowner seat.
And Tui's not here, but she's a previous RAP member, and she has the landlord position.
I'm Brendan Sullivan Sarignana. I'm a tenant position.
Okay. I'm sorry, I'm having a hard time hearing. I'm on the front row. Can you guys speak up just a little bit?
Or can they go to the mic to talk?
The mic would be good, yeah.
You have a hard time hearing them or us?
Them.
Okay. So, Christopher is in the tenant position.
Okay.
Suzanne Warner is in the homeowner position. Tui, who will hopefully be here shortly, is in the landlord position, and she is a previous existing RAC member. And Brendan is in the tenant position.
Okay. Karen, you know, covered it pretty well. I would kind of add the following, you know, that two things. One, it's the process involved that the RAC goes through is a process of mediation. And that means a number of things. It means that listening to what, you know, people are bringing before the RAC is really important, as Karen had said, and listening respectfully, and creating an environment in which people are not afraid to come and speak, they're not being heckled or anything like that, and that includes landlords and tenants, anybody. And I think what one of the ways that atmosphere gets created is that committee members are respectful of one another. When you address each other, when you speak to each other, when you have questions of each other. You know, Karen described how, you know, the tenant kind of presents their case, the landlord presents their case. We might ask questions. Sometimes the landlord or the tenant wants to come up and say something else because they want to respond to something that was said before. At the end of all that, what happens is, you know, it's a committee. And so you talk amongst yourselves and try to, you know, reach some consensus or whatever. And the process is literally somebody makes a motion, somebody seconds the motion, and, you know, you do ayes and nays. That process, you know, that's where, you know, being respectful among each other, I think, is important. Because that that mirrors that behavior out to people who come before the rec. The other thing with that is that, you know, Karen just mentioned that we always agree. You know, that is true, and it's also not true. It's true in the sense that at the end of the day, that's where we come out.
Right.
There have been many times when Karen might say X, and I say, you know, I'm really kind of in favor of Y. And then another committee member has some input, and another committee member has some input. At the end of all of that, you know, I'm willing to go to sort of X and a half, maybe, because if I do that, we come up with a unanimous recommendation. What's valuable to the tenants, and I think also to the landlords who come before the RAC, is that if the RAC has a recommendation, better that it be unanimous than not. That perhaps has a little more impact on the landlord, perhaps, to follow that recommendation. Perhaps it's helpful to the tenant if the tenant decides to sort of appeal the case to the city council, because then, you know, they're in the position of appealing a unanimous recommendation of the RAC. But that has to do with the fact that the RAC is a committee comprised of five people or, you know, whatever quorum shows up on a given night. And it's not one person. And so there's some give and take, and there's some, you know, working together with that. And I would just urge you to do it respectfully. Because one, I think it helps the process, and it helps the people who are coming before the RAC. And it makes it, and you know, it's kind of a byproduct of that, like I said, I think it kind of mirrors that out to the people who are coming before the RAC. In terms of the meeting themselves, both Karen and I have acted as chair, and you know, Claudia will kind of walk you through all that stuff. But you know, you'll get agendas, and you'll call the meeting to order, and you'll take a roll call, and you know, and all of that kind of stuff. When we've heard cases, one of the things that I've made a point of doing that I think can be helpful, and so I just throw it out there for, you know, as a suggestion, is even if a committee member doesn't speak up initially, I make sure that I ask everyone before there is like a vote or anything if they have something they want to add. You know, that ensures that all voices are heard. If there's a member who's a little more shy than another member, that ensures that they're heard. And again, I think it mirrors that respectful kind of behavior toward one another outward. Claudia mentioned the ordinance, which is in the packet. I would really urge you to be familiar with it. It gives you the context in which you're operating. You'll be asked questions about it. It's really important that you know what it is. Claudia often at meetings will explain what the procedure is to the parties, but you know, you guys should really know that too. And it's not rocket science. You know, it's in the ordinance language, but it's not rocket science. You know, one of the other things is, I guess it's just really important to focus on, you know, well, here's what the ordinance says the RAC does. The ordinance says the RAC mediates. You know, its purpose is to mediate. That's the, you know, the active verb in there. So as Karen said, you know, it's not to advocate. You know, Karen has her opinions about things. I have my opinions about things. Sometimes we agree, other times we don't. We've both had experiences while RAC members. You know, I got a 60-day no-cause eviction while I was a RAC member. Believe me, I had feelings about that. But I was also very, very clear that as long as I sat on that committee, I had to be neutral, publicly and privately. And I certainly had to be neutral on that committee. Or, you know, I had a choice. I could go and do something else, but not sit on that committee, because that committee is to mediate. I happen to be professionally trained as a mediator. The most important thing a mediator or a mediation committee has is its credibility as a neutral person or panel. If you don't maintain that, you have no credibility at all. You know, people need to come before you and feel that whatever the situation is, one, they will be heard. You know, they will genuinely be heard. And then you'll be fair without bias. And, you know, we all have our biases, but that's not a, I don't believe that nobody is completely unbiased. Anybody is completely unbiased. But in terms of, you know, how you hear things and how you respectfully deal with people and how you come to recommendations. It's important to, if you're going to mediate, come to that from kind of a position of neutrality. I think that's really important. I, like Karen, have gotten a lot of satisfaction out of doing it. And very often it has been because I've walked out at the end of the evening not feeling necessarily like someone just got the outcome that I would love them to have, but that given the constraints involved, given the powers, or lack thereof, that the RAC has, and what the RAC's power is the ability to persuade and the ability to mediate. That given, you know, the parameters within which we had to work, that we got the best possible outcome for somebody, and that we got a better outcome than they had when they walked in the door. That may not please everybody, but that's why I was there. I felt like I was making a difference within, you know, whatever those parameters are. And they may change in the future. But and I felt good about that. You know, not a perfect world, but you know, that's what community service is about to me, is that, you know, not a perfect world, but you're doing what you can within that world.
I wanted to say, dovetailing on what he's talking about, as far as being neutral and being a mediator, I want to say about 10 years ago when I was on the board, we had a tenant who voted for the tenant every time. Didn't matter what happened, didn't let, you know, there was really no listening, there was no nothing, there was just, I'm a tenant, I voted for the tenant. And the reason the RAC works is because you do have that neutrality, you do mediate. If we had tenants voting for tenants, landlords voting for landlords, the neutral homeowner would be the person who makes the decision. And it would defeat the whole purpose of what the mediation is about. So that's why we keep talking about mediation, not advocacy. And I realize some people would like it to be an advocacy position, but it will not work if that's what happens. And if it doesn't work, whatever, then the city needs to come up with something else. But in order for the RAC to work, it has to be, you have to come to it with an open mind about every case.
A couple little sort of almost practical kind of things that I've found. And it's something you kind of do in mediation anyways. You want the people coming to the mediation to have authority to actually make a decision, make a compromise, come to an agreement. It's often the first, if it's not the actual landlord who's there, it's the first thing I ask is, do you have authority to come to an agreement? Do you have the authority to make a compromise? Right here, right now, it may be your experience that sometimes they'll say yes, and as the evening goes on, you'll find out that's not really the case, but it's an important question to ask. Because if they don't have that authority, there's no point in listening to it. I shouldn't say that, but...
Well, you can't get anywhere. You can't make a decision.
You're not going to get anywhere. Or at least you know where you're going to get, which is you're not going to have an agreement or a compromise or anything like that. And that can be pretty frustrating. The other thing is, and this is kind of both a mediation and I suppose a Brown Act sort of thing, you have to be careful about giving legal advice. And in fact, whoever chairs will find there's a little disclaimer that you read at every meeting that says, I would be careful of that outside of RAC meetings. I have been approached by people many times outside of RAC meetings. And I happen to be an attorney, but that aside, and ask me for advice about either a case that we heard, a case that we considered bringing, or just, you know, the old hypothetical. And if it's anything the RAC has been involved in, I just politely tell them, you know, I'm sorry, it would be really inappropriate for me to comment on that or give you legal advice. Not only give you legal advice, but to comment on it at all. It would probably be a violation of the Brown Act, and it would certainly be inappropriate. There are, and you just have to do that and do it as politely as you can. There are times when people will think you're basically blowing them off when you do that, but it's what you have to do. You have to be very careful of that.
Thank you.
have a thick skin. You'll be criticized.
Regardless.
From all quarters for being somebody you're not, for all sorts of things, for making decisions for reasons you didn't make them for, whatever. If your goal is to contribute some solid community service, and hopefully, in any given instance, maybe not make it perfect, but help somebody out, those are good seats to sit.
Could I ask a question?
Absolutely. Any questions you have about the Brown Act?
Yeah, or are we going to wait?
So our assistant city attorney is going to talk on the Brown Act and Sunshine.
Okay.
Can I hold your question?
Yes, maybe hold it.
Okay.
You guys have
any questions about
questions
the process?
About
or?
Yeah.
I'll talk a little bit.
Oops.
I'll talk a little bit just about how the cases come to us. So we'll get calls. Or now in Ordinance 3131, it is actually a requirement that when a tenant receives an increase, there is very specific language that directs them to the Rent Review Advisory Committee. So we'll get a call, and somebody will want to submit a rent increase complaint, and we'll take that at our office. They can fax it in. They can email it to us. I get the complaint, and the first thing I do is call the tenant, listen to them, find out what's going on, see if I need any additional information. Sometimes they like to provide pictures of some maintenance issues and other things that they think might be helpful, or other correspondence maybe that they've had with the landlord that they think would be helpful. And after I speak to the tenant, I speak to the landlord. So before Ordinance 3131 that went into effect October 1st, the landlords were not required to participate. Now they are required to participate. But I work really hard with the landlords to make sure that they attend, that they understand what the process is, and to make sure that they send somebody that has the authority to make decisions. Especially starting October 1st, since it's a requirement. So I really stress that to them, and I really work hard to get somebody that's going to be present and able to make decisions. However, we do also encourage the tenants and the landlords to speak offline and communicate. And what we find is that most of the time, the biggest issue is that the tenant and the landlord have not even spoken, either because the tenant is scared of the landlord or for whatever other reason. So I really encourage the tenants and I really encourage the landlords on their end to really start that communication. And sometimes it takes for me to make that first call to get them to realize that they should be communicating. So that does happen. And recently that has kind of been what's working, is they're communicating and they're coming to some kind of agreement. So once they come to an agreement, then they give me a call or send me an email and let me know that they've come to an agreement. And so you'll see that's why we've had quite a few canceled meetings. It's because they've come to an agreement. But sometimes it really is just me calling the landlord or, telling, really encouraging the tenant to speak to their landlord and getting them hooked up. Sometimes until they get to the meeting is when they finally kind of start communicating. And for some, it does take to come to the meeting to start that communication.
Any other questions?
So usually the agendas are published a week in advance, so you'll receive your packet a week in advance. And then sometimes we may go down to the wire where the cases are resolved even that same day.
Okay. I thought you had touched on something. Housing is, it's not going to the food stand and buying apples and bananas. It's a very emotional issue. And for not all, but for some tenants, it's very scary for them to come before some group of people who they don't know. And, you know, they're perhaps afraid the landlord will be angry with them for that or whatever. And, you know, I would just say, you know, bear that in mind and make it as easy for people as possible. Be calming, be reassuring, let them know that, you know, they will be heard. You will not allow anyone to bully them in your presence. And they'll be heard and they'll be listened to. It's really, really important. Yeah, that's also true for the landlords.
Okay.
That they not be bullied, and they will listen to them.
What I was going to say, whoever decides, whoever you vote on as being chair, is sometimes that's the biggest, that's the hardest job, is keeping order in a meeting to make sure that a lot of times, let's say a tenant will be talking about something and the landlord may say, you know, try to interrupt them and say, no, that's not true or whatever. And as the chair, you really need to keep control of the meeting and make sure that if a landlord's speaking, they get to be heard. No one's talking. If a tenant's speaking, they get to be heard. And you really, whoever you decide to be chair needs to be a strong chair, because that it really is something. Once you, if you let it get out of control, it'll get out of control because it's such an emotional issue. So I just encourage whoever you choose as being chair to be sure that that person is able to cut things off right away and make sure that tenants are speaking, no one's interrupting them. Let them speak. Same with the landlord.
And I think it's important to remember when that happens that you're there because, you know, a particular tenant or, you know, is having a problem they're coming to you with. And if somebody is interrupting that process, even if that somebody is theoretically on that tenant's side, they're still interrupting that tenant's process. It's your job to keep that process safe and you know, meaningful for that tenant. They can't be heard. There's a whole bunch of shouting going on, no matter who's doing the shouting.
Also, they shouldn't be speaking to each other. So we usually have the podium.
Until they get friendly.
Usually they're speaking to you as the committee. Sometimes they kind of tend to want to turn around and speak to the tenant, so you got to direct them back speak to you, because otherwise they'll get a little bit of tension.
And it gets out of control. That's a good point. That happens quite a bit. Somebody will be addressing the committee at the podium, and whomever, you know, is back there, whether it's the landlord or the tenant, will start responding to something they're saying. And, you know, you have to just snuff that right away. And also let them know they'll have their opportunity to respond. But, again, it goes to that respectfulness. We're going to listen to this person respectfully, and then we will listen to you respectfully. But, you know, not allow them to bully one another. All right, you're welcome to, you know, keep it a safe space for both of them.
Do you have any questions?
Nope.
Okay. Thank you so much for coming.
Good luck. Dave, I want to ask a question.
Sure.
Yeah. I'm Mike Roush. I'm with the City Attorney's Office here in Alameda, and I just wanted to ask the former members, after you sort of do your mediation, make a motion, and let's say that's been approved, I'm assuming that there's sort of this awkward silence then between the tenant and the landlord. What happens practically after the motion is made in terms of what takes place?
Good question.
So at that point, I, as the staff person, will kind of walk the landlord and the tenant through what the next steps are. So, for example, if there's a recommendation made, then I will let the landlord know that they'll be receiving that recommendation letter in the mail, and they have 10 days to respond. And so until they respond, then we don't move on to the next step, but I do let them know that the next step is that the case would be heard before City Council. And I do explain that to the tenants and the landlord even ahead of time. I'll do a reminder at the meeting, and then sometimes I'll even walk out with the tenant just to make sure that they understand what just happened, especially if they don't speak English, then I'll make sure. And we do offer translation, and I offer translation ahead of time if they need it. So we do have translation available for them at the meeting as needed.
I have a question about that. Mm-hmm. So those that are bilingual, are we allowed to speak a different language other than English, or no, because
everyone needs to understand what the council members are saying.
Like, yes.
Say, for instance, I have somebody who speaks Spanish or Portuguese. Mm-hmm. Would I be allowed to speak Spanish?
So I would translate for Spanish, okay. And then I would bring in a separate translator for any other language.
Okay.
Just to keep everything neutral.
One last little thing I just thought of, speaking of, you know, people starting to respond to one another, landlord tenants, and this is a part of Brown Act thing as well, I suppose, but there's often public comment at the end of a RAC meeting, and you don't need to comment upon the comment, nor should you.
It's basically
it's public comment, it's whatever somebody has to say, and you don't respond to it. You have whatever opinion you want, but you don't respond to it.
I was going to say one thing also about the recommendations, because there is that awkward moment that happens. And if they haven't resolved it right away, we do advise that they pay whatever the current increase is if they're under that timeline, because we don't want them to get into any kind of legal issues about not paying their rent. There is usually at our meetings, Angie from Echo Housing normally attends our meetings, and she is a great resource if you ever have any questions. She's always there. She's there to meet the tenants, and they talk about these kinds of things. What should you do? Should I pay the increase? Should I not pay the increase? I can't, you can't legally tell them what to do or what not to do, because that's giving legal advice, but we don't want them to get themselves into further problems with their landlord by not going along with the thing. It's retroactive. Any recommendation we make, if it's something that we say it's too much, you need it would be refunded back, and that would be part of the recommendation. So you would say, maybe, the rent's going to be this for a year, and starting here, and in your recommendation that it's retroactive back to the date that it happened. So you just have to be very specific in your recommendation. Sometimes there'll be something like a recommendation where you'll say, let's say somebody wants an 8% increase, but you know that that's going to be too hard, that maybe it's 4% for the first 6 months, 4% the next 6 months. But again, it's all mediation, so you need to hear from the tenant if that's going to work for them. And sometimes that is an answer for them. It gives them a little time, and it gives them some space where they can work into it. Sometimes it doesn't work at all, but it is mediation, so there's all the combinations of possible answers that you can come up to make it work are all available to you. Figure it out when you're hearing this, in talking to a landlord and a tenant, how you can craft something that will work for both of them. And it can be almost anything, that they'll agree on.
So, and when the complaint comes in, the first thing I do is look at when is the effective date of the increase. So before they even get to the meeting, I've already had that conversation. Let's say
they still ask you, though.
Yeah, let's say the rent increase went into effect December 1st, and we're not meeting until December 9th. Well, I let them know, you really need to pay that increased amount, and then I let them know what the process would be if a recommendation comes in, because we never want them to get to the point of eviction.
Also, another thing that comes up, too, is most of the time, when these cases come before the RAC, it's on a year-long lease. Sometimes it might be months, but usually you're looking at a lease renewal came up, and they're either looking at them to, the first year just went out, and now it's going month to month, or in some of the situations around Alameda, they'll give them one rent if it's month to month, and another if it's signed a lease, which we never thought much of that. Yeah, it's fine. So yeah, you just have to pay attention to that stuff.
Any other questions?
Sorry.
Okay.
Well, good luck,
yeah. Yeah. Thank you for volunteering.
Thank you for being here.
Appreciate it.
Hi, give you a hug for coming on this side. I'm good. We'll talk.
Thank you, Steve.
Thanks for welcome. Do you have any questions?
Yeah, Suzanne?
Hi, I'm Tweet.
Nice to meet you. Hi,
thank you.
Chris?
Nice
Tweet. Pleasure.
Thank you.
David? Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Again, my name is Mike Brown with the City Attorney's Office. want to talk to you tonight about the Sunshine Ordinance that the City of Alameda has adopted and the Brown Act, which is a state law, and they basically parallel one another. The Sunshine Ordinance is a little more onerous than the Brown Act, but they both deal with open government and transparency, and some system things you should know about that, because you are considered under the Sunshine Ordinance as a policy body. Under the Brown Act, you're a legislative body. Have any of you served on a similar kind of commission or committee before?
I have.
What have you served on?
I was part of the Adolescent Addiction Task Force of Marion County.
Okay.
And we were policy making body.
Okay, so given that experience, you understand that what happens is when you are a policy body or a legislative body under the Brown Act, it meets certain requirements that have to be observed. For example, when you have your meetings, they have to have agendas, and the agendas have to be posted, have to be sent out a week ahead of time, have to be posted, and the only items that you can discuss and make decisions on, or make, in this case, recommendations on, are those items which, in fact, are on the agenda. The agenda does have a provision that allows for public comment, in which members of the public can comment to you on matters that are within your what's called subject matter jurisdiction. And again, typically there is no obligation to necessarily respond to any of those comments. But on the other hand, if it's a simple answer that a staff member can answer, etc., you don't have to be completely silent about it, but you don't want to end up with in a dialogue or a debate with a speaker with respect to the meeting open to the public portion of your agenda. I think the thing that that you need to be cognizant of as members of this body is what's called not reaching decisions or not communicating with each other except during the meetings. When you get your agenda, you're going to get certain material along with that agenda. What did they get? A copy of the complaint and things of that nature? So let's say you get your agenda and it's got two or three complaints on it. It would be inappropriate for, let's say, one of the committee members to call one of the other committee members and say, hey, I've got this. What do you think about this? And then for that same committee member to call a different committee member and say, hey, I've talked to committee member Jones, and he or she thinks this. Now, what do you think about that? Because both the Sunshine Ordinance and the Brown Act prohibits that kind of discussion, deliberation, or taking any kind of action outside the confines of the actual meeting itself. That's probably not a likely situation to happen, but it's just something that you need to be aware of, that you don't find yourself in a situation where you are discussing an item on the agenda except in the context of a noticed meeting. Now, that's not to say that the four or five of you can't show up at a city council meeting or some other social event. It's not like you can't be in the same room together. It's just that when you are all in the same room in the same place, you can't talk about the business that's in front of you as the committee. I think, again, I want to emphasize that the idea of the Sunshine Ordinance and the Brown Act is to be transparent, is to let the public know what is the conduct of the city committees being done in public, and that there isn't anything going on other than what is right in front of you. This committee is a little different compared to other commissions, where they have sometimes programs and they have agenda materials and they make recommendations to the city council, etc. Your goal is to mediate and make recommendations to a tenant and a landlord. So it's a little different than your normal committee or commission that the city normally has, and you know, because many of you probably have not served in this capacity, it will be, you know, there's a learning curve that's going to happen here. But I think with Claudia's assistance that you will have not too much problem getting through it. In addition, under the Sunshine Ordinance and the Brown Act, as I mentioned, there's an agenda posted. Those are the items that you're going to discuss. That's the only items you can discuss. But in that context, you know, you have quite a bit of flexibility in terms of what you discuss and what you say. You just don't want to be deliberating, you know, outside the context and the confines of the meeting itself. The Sunshine Ordinance and the Brown Act also, not the Brown Act per se, but the Sunshine Ordinance and what is called the Public Records Act also are part of this transparency in open government. And basically what it says is that material that is provided to you, for the most part, is public. Now, there is certain information that from time to time we would have to redact because of privacy interest, but generally information that's being provided to you as a committee, those documents are considered public. So just kind of keep that in mind as you take material in and consider it, that people sort of give up their privacy to a certain extent by being involved in a city process such as this. That is sort of an overview of what the Brown Act and the Sunshine Ordinance is intended to do. I know you've got some material there that talks about the open and public process. I do suggest you read that. It's probably more information than you need, but I think it will be helpful. As I think the former committee member said, take a look at what the ordinance that has created this committee, what your duties and responsibilities are. Again, it sort of gives you an overview, but it's not anything that I think, it'll be a challenge to go through this first few meetings because you're going to be learning. But if you're diligent about it and think it through and keep your neutrality, I think you'll do a fine job. And the city council appreciates the time and effort you put into it. Are there particular questions I might be able to answer concerning Brown Act, Sunshine Ordinance, or transparency issues? Do you have a question?
I have one question. So the idea about not meeting and having discussions in private about things that come before the board.
Yes.
I understand. My question would be, say, as a board, we decide that people keep having a question about XYZ, maybe we aren't explaining it correctly. So we wanted to discuss on our own time, maybe we could format it differently. Maybe we could have some kind of verbal disclaimer that we say. That doesn't count as
it would, actually.
Okay.
What I would suggest, let's say that the committee feels that there's a need to discuss how we do things, how we consider these items. This seems to be a bump in the road. We're not really effectively doing maybe what we need to do. What you would do, you would simply ask Claudia to put that on an agenda. And you could have a meeting. You could have a meeting like we're having tonight, which is not considering any of the applications or any of the complaints, but it would simply be a forum in which you would then have a notice meeting, and then you could have that discussion among yourselves in terms of whether there is a process that you feel needs to be changed or remedied so that the process does work more smoothly. But those kinds of matters, procedural, those kinds of things should not be discussed outside the context of the regular meeting. But there is an opportunity to do that. It just needs to be put on an agenda.
Could they form like an ad hoc group of two, which is not a quorum, to discuss that item and come back to the rest of the group and put it on the agenda to talk about what they discussed and what they might suggest? Or
The question she asked is, would it be possible if there was an item that where there could be an ad hoc committee to perhaps look at the issue that you raised? And the answer is yes. You can form an ad hoc committee of less than a quorum, therefore two of you, and that group then could meet. ad hoc committees that are not going to be of a long-standing nature do not have to observe the same kind of requirements. And so you could have an ad hoc committee who would go off and do the kinds of things you're talking about, and then you would come back on a regular agenda, and that committee would then make its recommendation or at least indicate what it was thinking, and then the group could decide whether or not it wanted to go down that road or not. So the answer is yes.
Go ahead, sir. Are there minutes of the ad hoc meeting, committee meetings?
Are there minutes?
We've never had
The ad hoc committee. I was. Typically, the answer would be no. Ad hoc committees are not required to follow the same requirements that regular committees have. But typically, you know, it would be an unusual situation probably to have ad hoc committees for a group like this, but it could happen. Certainly, if you wanted to form that, Claudia would contact the city attorney's office, make sure there was an appropriate thing to do, and we would advise you accordingly. Any other questions, please?
I have a question that may not be related directly to the Brown Act and the Sunshine Act, but in discussing transparency, when we're reviewing the complaints, if we discover that we know someone that has filed a complaint or is the landlord named in the complaint, I assume there would be some disclosure process or potentially abstaining from the vote. Could you speak to that?
There is always the concern of bias, and the issue is the fact that you might know the person or have had some business relationship with that person or with a tenant, etc., does not in and of itself disqualify you from considering the matter unless you feel that that personal relationship or that business relationship would cause you not to be able to, you know, to consider the matter in the fair and neutral way that that you should do your job. But the town is not that big, and you are all out and about in the community. You're going to know people, and so the fact that you might know somebody who's going to appear in front of you is not in and of itself disqualification. You have to sort of judge that for yourself, whether or not you feel you can be with an open mind, I think is the idea. I mean, you know, sort of by definition, you have property owners, landlords, and tenants that are on the committee itself. So, you know, there's perhaps an inherent potential for feeling one way or another about who's appearing in front of you. But that, again, is not in itself a disqualification. It's when you feel you cannot be, cannot do your mediation, can't be as neutral as you would like to be. That's would be grounds to disqualify yourself and not participate. Okay. I'll be here to answer the questions if you have any other questions afterwards.
Thank you.
So thank you for bearing with me, because normally all our meetings have a chair, and I don't quite have a chair, so I'm kind of moving the meeting along. So if you don't have any more questions, we're going to move on to public comment.
Actually, I do have one more question. When are we going to nominate a chair? What's that process?
So at our next meeting on December 14th will be our first meeting together as with this committee. So that'll be the first thing we're going to do.
Okay. Got it.
Okay. So our first speaker is John Klein, and he has a handout that he would like for you to pass out. Handout available to the public on our website, the Housing Authority website. We're going to do a demo.
Hi, my name is John Klein. I'm with the Alameda Renters Coalition, welcome aboard. You picked actually a pretty exciting time to come on board, so good luck. So I passed out, there's a document that I've given you, and it has a series of 8 recommendations for changes that we see need to be part of the RAC. I'm not going to try to cover all of them. I'm going to focus on one specific area. We've showed these to the mayor, the city council, and your predecessor members since they've moved on, and no work has been done with it. So, number one, the RAC has had a target of 10% rent increases, and we just completely disagree with that, and we hope you'll review that. And that's all I want to say about that, because you'll hear a lot more about that as we go along. So really, I want to talk to you more about items 2, 3, and 4. They're all regarding mediation, outside mediators. And so what happens is that often, if you've followed the RAC and looked at the minutes and agendas, you'll see that from time to time, regularly, items are taken off calendar because they've been settled or they've gone out to mediation. And that's the end of it, as far as the public's knowledge. And so if it goes to a mediator, none of that appears on the public record other than the fact that it's been taken off calendar and gone to mediation. There's no reporting or anything. So in the materials that I've given you, if you would turn to... and we think that's a problem. We think that really should change. We think there needs to be transparency. We think that the parties should be required to come back and report the outcome of the mediation. And we've got a really good example here that's going on right now that I want to talk to you about. So if you'll turn in the packet to there's a newspaper article. It's an op-ed that says rent review panels is the answer to landlord-tenant disputes. And this was just last week in the Alameda Journal. And if you look at the bracketed section there, I'll read it. Over the past 2 years, Jeff Canberra has personally worked with owners and tenants alike to resolve rental disputes in advance of Rent Review Advisory Committee hearings. Jeff, an attorney trained in mediation, has been hugely successful in the volunteer work he has done. Most recently, he spearheaded an effort to resolve disputes between more than a dozen residents and the owner at 2019 Shoreland Drive. Today has been excluded from trying to mediate at 470 Central. And this is written by Don Lindsay, who's a pretty prominent landlord here in Alameda. It's Gallagher and Lindsay. He is the Lindsay. Okay. So I want to give you some background on 2019. Four or five months ago, 15 units at 2019 Shoreline got notices of 50% rent increases, 50% rent increases. So at the Renters Coalition, we go, what? So we wanted to come down and sit in. They were scheduled to be heard. We wanted to come down. We got to the door, signed up there. Meetings canceled. Parties in negotiation, in mediation. Bong. Okay. And that's the end. And that's the end. Okay? We don't know anything about that. So a few weeks ago, I said, well, what did happen with that? So I asked through the city clerk and through the housing authority to the RAC to have the mediator come back and report on the outcome of that mediation. I did not know at that time it was Jeff Canberra. Mr. Canberra replied that he can't do that. It's confidential. I think there's a problem with that. I think that's a problem and I think that you probably, maybe you see it, maybe you don't. And that's what I'm here. I'm not here to like beat you over the head and tell you that's a problem. You need to fix it. But I think you need to consider if that's the kind of outcome you want for a mediation of that significance. Sorry, I'm a little nervous. So the situation is the complaints start public and they go private. And again, we would like you to consider if that's what you want for your process. And this raises all sorts of issues. Again, if we go back to that newspaper op-ed, the opinion of the writer is that Mr. Cambra, the mediator, I don't necessarily need to personalize this, but the mediator has been hugely successful. Well, how do we know that if you won't report it? Trust me, I'm a landlord. We can't accept that. Okay. So really, we're asking for daylighting the mediation process, bringing transparency and accountability to it, and we think it's for you to decide if that's an appropriate approach for mediation. We believe it is not, and the recommendations that we have there in what we gave you indicate how we think the mediation should be handled. I mean, it even raises the idea of actually the mediator and the landlords are working for being the gatekeeper for what comes to you. If they can just, all they need to do is watch the agendas, see what complaints are there, and pick the ones that, for whatever reason, they want to mediate, take them into mediation, nobody ever hears from them about it again. We have a problem with that. We don't think that's transparent. We think it undermines your core mission and the core purpose of the RAC. Maybe you think that's fine. I don't want to stand here and argue against mediation, but we think it's subverting the public process and the core mission of the RAC. So thank you.
The second speaker is Maria Dominguez.
Hi, good evening, committee members. My name is Maria Dominguez. I'm a resident of Alameda. I'm a renter. I live here in the West End. And on November 30th, I received a rent increase in spite of the fact that we are in a rent moratorium through January 11th. I received a rent increase of over 8%. The increase is about 13%. And I'm also now the landlord is trying to pass on the garbage utility bill. Currently, I pay for all the other utilities except for the garbage. And so when I factor in that, I'm looking at a rent increase of at least 15%. I have a law degree. I have the education and the resources to at least be able to go into the community and advocate for myself, but I do worry about a lot of the other renters who are also receiving these rent increases in spite of the moratorium. And I want to make sure that this body is going to be out there in the community and making sure that they know about this forum, that they know how to access the resources, and that they're also educating the landlords, because I am still trying to work out what's going to happen in my particular situation, but I have a feeling that the landlord perhaps didn't have all the information about the moratorium. And also this new issue of landlords passing on the utility and whether or not that's also to be factored in into the rent increase. So I myself am still trying to research all of that and looking at the codes and whatnot and all the literature and decisions coming out of this body of the City Council and otherwise. So I'm here as a concerned resident, I'm here as a concerned renter and a member of the community, and especially living in the part of Alameda that historically is there's a lot of immigrants in the community, there's a lot of working class people who maybe don't have access to other resources that other people on the island do have. So thank you for your service. I look forward to being a part of these meetings and bringing other members of the Alameda Renters Coalition as we move forward to working on policy issues and making sure that we do make a rent stabilization ordinance happen here, because it's much needed. If you look at all the trends, I was born and raised in Oakland, lived there all my life, and came here to Alameda because it was more affordable in terms of what I was looking for and the quality of life. And I think that housing is a human right. I think that right now, if we want to continue the integrity of our communities, and as someone who feels really strongly, and I work in Oakland, I work in a nonprofit, and I work with youth who are system impacted youth at risk, and I want to make sure that especially the three youth that are part of my program who live and go to school at Alameda, that they can stay on the island, that they can continue to finish their high school degrees, to be in this community that really supports them, and so that they can continue to move on to do really productive things, not just in Alameda, but in the greater Bay Area. And I think this displacement of families on the island and in neighboring cities is really creating a lot of other social issues, and they're not going to go away. And I'm mostly concerned about the issue of increased homelessness and families who are couch surfing or just have, you know, have temporary housing, but they're very, very close to just being out there on the streets. So thank you again, and I hope that you will be really keeping a close ear to what's going on in the community and how people are being affected by these issues. Thank you.
Thank you.
So we have no other speakers. Were there any additional questions?
Yeah.
Okay, so I think we can adjourn. 7:10 Thank you very much, everybody, for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm shaking, but I'm getting over a cold, so
I'm so on.
All right.